Have I gotten rid of my cough yet?
Okay. You ready to go, Commissioner?
Let's roll.
All right, good morning. I think we'll go ahead and get started. Let the record show that it is 8:30 a.m. on May 2nd, 2014. We are present in the commission hearing room in the state capitol in Bismarck, North Dakota for the public hearing scheduled in the matter of the application of Montana Dakota Utilities Company for an order and certificate to extend service to Menards, Inc. near McKenzie, North Dakota. This is case PSC case number PU-13-871. My name is Wade Mann, and I am the procedural administrative law judge designated to preside over this matter. At this time, I will have each of the parties note their appearances for the record, beginning with counsel for the applicant.
Dan Kuntz, appearance from Montana Dakota Utilities Co.
And Mr. Kuntz, who do you have with you?
I have Craig Lowstreeter and Ken Paul from Montana Dakota will both be testifying.
Okay. And counsel for Capital Electric?
Matthew Olson, Your Honor, and today with me is Lars Nygren, the general manager of Capital Electric. I have Ron Lipp. He is with Capital Electric as well. He's an engineer, and I have Paul Fitterer, and he is the business manager of the co-op as well, and it is possible that all three will testify today.
Okay, thank you. And advisory staff?
Thank you, Your Honor. Ryan Norell on behalf of the Public Service Commission advisory staff, and with me is Jerry Lean.
Okay. And members of the Public Service Commission present today are Commissioner Brian Kalk, Commissioner Randy Christman, and Commissioner Julie Fedorchek. And I believe, Commissioner Fedorchek, is this your portfolio?
It is.
And do you have any initial opening comments?
Sure. They'll be brief, but this is the first time I've dealt with this issue. I think it is one of the rare times that this has come up since some of the legislative changes, and typically the companies have been getting together and working these out. So we had high hopes that that would happen here, but it didn't. So we're going to just work through the issues. There's 10 of them, 10 key questions that we'll be looking at and considering and weighing the decision. And I've looked through all the materials that's been provided so far, and we'll have lots of questions as we move forward. So that's all I have to say.
Thank you. Commissioner Kalk?
Thank you, Your Honor. Thank you for everyone for being here today. The only comment I would have is that just to add to Commissioner Fedorchek's thoughts that at the end of the day, everybody needs to work together, and that's the bottom line. I went through one of these with North Central and Lauderdale, and we go through and make the decision, and there's always going to be hurt feelings, and we need to base it on a good solid record, and at the end of the day, everybody needs to work together to make sure we get electricity to everybody that's reliable. So let's not lose sight of that at the end of the day. So thank you.
Commissioner Christman?
The only thing I would say is it does seem like I've dealt with this before many times, except for then it was in the legislature as we were trying to write legislation that would deal with every possibility every time, and we're unable to. And one of the questions I'm going to have, but I don't know for whom, but certainly for both sides, so maybe if the right person wants to address it before we get to our questions, is just a recap. Like I said, years ago, we were struggling in the legislature to try and fix these problems in advance. And I think never felt that there was a way to write into Century Code something that met every odd possibility. And then somewhere, and I've forgotten exactly what all transpired, but between this commission years ago, and it seems to me there was maybe a court case or something involved, things changed, and suddenly these things started to be negotiated out much more frequently than what had been in the past. And for years, like I say, that's how these have been resolved. And now this one, it seems that hasn't been the case, at least till now. So it's back before us. But I'm wanting a refresher course on what happened back then that caused the ability for, in most cases, the sides to get together and come to some kind of a deal, and then why this is so different when sometimes the same players that are in the room today are able to reach a resolution, and this one just seems to be a stalemate. So hopefully someone gets into that. If not, I'll hopefully ask the right people to answer that. That's all I have.
Thank you, Commissioner. Again, this is a hearing on the application of Montana Dakota Utilities to extend service to Menards, Inc. at a location in Section 33, Township 139 North, Range 77 West. Capital Electric filed a protest and requested a hearing. The notice of hearing filed in the case on February 26, 2014, sets forth a list of the 10 issues that will be addressed at today's public hearing. Before we get into the evidentiary portion of the hearing, we'll briefly go over the hearing procedure that will be followed in the matter today. MDU, as the applicant, will present its case first. MDU's witnesses will be subject to cross-examination by Mr. Olson and advisory staff, and then members of the commission may ask questions of each of the witnesses. Following commission questioning, I will entertain any further questions that may be necessary. And following MDU's presentation of its case, I will call on Capital Electric to present its case. And following direct examination of Capital Electric's witnesses, Mr. Kuntz will be allowed to cross-examine the witnesses, followed by commission advisory staff, and then questions from the commissioners. And again, any follow-up questions that will be necessary will be entertained at that time. The rules of evidence will apply today. Documentary evidence must be introduced and marked as an exhibit and admitted into the record. No decision will be reached on the matter today. The proceedings are being recorded, and the commission will later issue findings of fact, conclusions of law, and a final order with respect to the relief requested in the application. Any party not agreeing with the final decision of the commission has the right to request a rehearing, reopening, or to appeal a decision to district court. Any questions by any of the parties before we move on to the hearing?
No, Your Honor.
No, Your Honor.
Mr. Olson. Mr. Norrell? Okay. Would you like to make an opening statement?
Thank you, Your Honor. I think maybe in lieu of an opening statement, maybe I'll address Commissioner Christman's comments and provide background I can on the TIA from the top of my head. Prior to the 1960s, you know, as you know, co-ops are not regulated by this commission and can basically, you know, serve customers at the customer's request. Prior to the 1960s, public utilities could extend their services without a certificate of public convenience and necessity outside a city that they were already serving if it was just an extension of their services. In the 1960s, what's come to be known as the TIA was passed and basically requires that a public utility cannot extend its facilities outside a city unless it gets a certificate of public convenience and necessity. The court cases have said that that statute did not establish a preference for one provider or another. It just meant that for a utility to serve outside a city where it holds a franchise, it has to get a certificate of public convenience and necessity. And then if there's a contest like we have in this case, then the commission will determine which of the providers would serve. And then since that time, there's been a series of court cases which have, you know, looked at different issues in terms of what the commission should rely on in making that decision. And as a result, we've come to the kind of the 10 criteria that, you know, for the last 30 years have been in kind of the standard notice of hearing on these TIA cases.
Hey, Dan.
Yes.
Pull your microphone up a little closer. I think it's hard to hear on the
board. Okay. How's that? Probably in about the early 80s, the conflict really got to be on these TIA cases, I think, got to be more prevalent because as the cities, particularly the larger cities, grew, the co-ops had services in those areas where the cities were growing. The cities, the public utilities felt that they ought to be able to continue to serve the cities that they have historically served, even if they grew. The co-ops felt they ought to be able to serve those areas where they've historically were serving customers even after they were annexed. And there were a number of cases where that came up, and that was the battles I think Commissioner Christman was referring to in the legislature over trying to amend the TIA to deal with those situations where the cities were annexing areas. There was a case about 8-10 years ago between these two parties and called the Boulder Ridge case precisely on that type of an issue in terms of who should be able to serve a newly annexed area. Following the outcome of that case about 7 years ago, there was a bill introduced in the legislature that allowed for service area agreements. Prior to that time, the utilities did not, because of antitrust considerations, the utilities and the co-ops, there was questions whether they could have service area agreements. There were some of the utilities and some of the co-ops did have them, and then I think at least Montana, Dakota, and perhaps others were concerned about antitrust considerations, canceled some of those service area agreements. At the urging of the leadership 7 years ago, a bill was developed to allow for service area agreements between utilities and co-ops. And as over that period of time, we've been able to negotiate a number of those service agreements, but they primarily are around the major cities. And it deals with, you know, and each one's a little different, but trying to figure out as the city grows and new areas are annexed, who would be allowed to serve those annexed areas. And there's usually reopeners in there to make sure there's kind of a balance between the two. And so most of the cities, I think larger cities now, probably have a service area agreement in place, at least within our service territory. What the service area agreements don't cover typically are these smaller areas outside the major cities. Typically, you don't see a lot of growth around cities like McKenzie. So people don't spend a lot of time trying to negotiate a service area agreement for those rural areas where both the utility has customers and the co-op has got customers. Unless you went to kind of like what the telephones have where, you know, you draw large blocks around the whole state and the service area for the entire state is kind of divided up. We're still back in those situations to the old situation we have here where you've got the TIA criteria where someone outside that area of a service area agreement wants a service from a utility. The utility still has to apply for a public convenience necessity certificate. And you see those, you know, all the time. I suspect, you know, just about every month we probably have one or two or three of those coming into you. A lot of times they're not contested because it's clear cut in terms of the utility wouldn't be applying if it didn't think it could prove public convenience and necessity, and likewise the co-op doesn't protest because it's pretty clear cut that the utility is going to win. Frankly, this is a case where it's a much closer call, and that's why we're here. And it's also a fairly large load, which is important to both the utility, the cooperative, and the customer in this particular case. So that's kind of the difference as to what the difference between a service area agreement. They're voluntary. Nobody's required to enter into them. And traditionally, they've been focused around the larger cities. We're kind of moving down. We're getting to some of the smaller cities now. We just filed one becoming for the commission for Watford City, which is no longer a small city anymore, but that's kind of where the focus has been.
Mr. Olson, Capital Electric, have an opening statement.
I think we can move right forward into. I think we're fine moving right into testimony.
Okay. Any comments from advisory staff?
No, Your Honor.
Okay. Mr. Kuntz, you can call your first witness.
We'll call Craig Lowstreeter, please.
Mr. Kuntz, sorry, I didn't catch the last name.
Lowstreeter.
Lowstreeter. Mr. Lowstreeter, I'm required to advise you that the maximum penalty for perjury is a Class C felony punishable by a maximum fine of $5,000, maximum 5 years imprisonment, or both. Being advised of the penalty for perjury, do you promise to tell the truth in this matter?
I do.
Okay, go ahead, Mr. Kuntz.
Please state your name and spell your last name for the record.
It's Craig Lowstreeter, Lohstreeter.
What's your business address, Mr. Lowstreeter?
909 Airport Road, Bismarck, North Dakota.
Whom are you employed by?
Montana Dakota Utilities Company.
And what's your position with Montana Dakota?
Region Electric Superintendent.
What are your responsibilities as the Regional Electric Superintendent?
Supervise the engineering, construction, and maintenance of the electric activities within the region.
How long have you held that position?
Since 2004.
And can you summarize your prior work experience?
I started with MDU as a lineman and have held positions of electric construction supervisor, assistant electric superintendent, and transmission construction and maintenance supervisor, and now currently the Region Electric Superintendent.
So how long have you worked for MDU?
38 years.
And are you familiar with MDU's application for a Certificate of Public Convenience and Necessity to provide electric service to the Menard site near McKenzie, North Dakota?
I am.
Does MDU provide electric distribution service in the vicinity of the Menard site?
We do.
I want to show you what's been marked as Exhibit Number 1, and I think you can, we have a PowerPoint copy of that Exhibit 2, if you could bring that up, Mr. Lowstreeter. And can you identify what this exhibit is, please?
This is showing Montana Dakota's electric facilities within a two-mile radius of the Menard site.
And was this exhibit prepared by you or under your direction?
It was.
We'd offer Exhibit Number 1.
Mr. Olson, any objection?
No objections.
Mr. Norrell?
No objections, Your Honor.
MDU Exhibit Number 1 is admitted.
Mr. Lowstreeter, we're going to, using Exhibit Number 1, I'm going to ask you to point out some of the various facilities that are showing on that exhibit. First of all, where is the location of the Menards, the proposed Menards site shown on this exhibit?
It is. The Menard site is the, I don't know if this is going to show up very good, but it's the blue polygon kind of in the center circle there.
And what is the, and then to the left of that area, to the northwest, is a box with dark lines around it and circles in the middle. What's that?
The box is the McKenzie town limits, and the green dots within are our service points for customers.
And does Montana Dakota provide service within the town site of McKenzie?
We do.
And then does Montana Dakota also have transmission facilities within this two-mile radius as shown on Exhibit 1?
Yes, we do.
And where are those showing?
That's the red line towards the top of this exhibit that runs left and right on the map.
And what's the size of this particular transmission line?
It's a 46 kV line.
And does this exhibit show when the line was built?
It does. The labeling is on the red line on each side of the substation. It was west of McKenzie. Was rebuilt in 1972, and east of McKenzie was rebuilt in 1975.
So what do you mean when you say rebuilt?
I believe the original line was constructed in 1945.
So this line replaced the prior transmission line in the area?
That is correct.
And what's the termination points for this transmission line?
This line begins at Bismarck at a transmission substation and runs easterly along the interstate to Dawson, where it ties in with a WAPA transmission substation, and then continues south to Wishick, where it ties in with an MDU transmission substation.
And does Exhibit Number 1 also show the substation that would be used to serve the Menard site?
It does.
And where is that showing?
That is the blue square on that red line kind of towards the top of the center circle.
And what's the size of the substation?
It has two 100 kVA transformers for a total of 200 kVA capacity.
And can this substation be served from either direction off of that transmission line?
Yes, it can.
And what does that mean then?
It means that if there's a problem on one side or the other on the transmission side, it has alternate feed. So if there was a problem on one side, that can be isolated and served from another direction, which increases reliability of service.
So if there were an outage, for example, between Bismarck and the substation would still be able to provide electricity to the city of McKenzie?
That's correct.
And then can you identify the distribution lines that are shown on Exhibit 1?
The distribution lines are the blue line that runs south out of the substation and that black blocked area, and then there's also lines running south and west out of that area.
Now, is this a three-phase or a single-phase line?
The line from the substation to the town is three-phase. The line that runs south and west is a single-phase line.
And what type of service will Menards require for their site?
Three-phase.
And so you're saying it's three-phase through this into the town site of McKenzie currently?
That's correct.
And what does it mean to have three-phase versus two-phase versus one-phase service?
Single-phase service is it just serves small load, typically residential, small commercial, that type of thing. Three phases for large commercial industrial applications.
Now I want you to turn to what's been marked as exhibit number 2 and bring that PowerPoint up, if you will. Can you tell us what's shown on exhibit number 2?
This shows the detail of that black squared area that was on the previous exhibit.
For the town site of McKenzie?
It is.
And was this exhibit prepared by you or under your direction?
Yes, it was.
And when you say the detail, you mean the detail of the distribution system and the customer locations?
That's correct.
We'd offer exhibit number 2.
Mr. Olson, any objection?
No objection.
Mr. Norrell?
No objection.
MDU exhibit 2 is admitted.
Using exhibit number 2, Mr. Lowell-Streeter, can you describe the distribution facilities shown on that exhibit and when they were constructed, if it's shown on here?
Yeah, the different colored lines, the blue lines are showing our distribution primary, and then the other colors are showing secondary lines, service lines, and the green dots are meter points for the customers.
Go ahead.
And the construction dates are, I can't see them from here, but they're shown as a 69, I think, in summer 1960, 77, 79. The dates are on where it also shows the size of the conductor.
And I forgot to ask you with respect to exhibit number 1, Mr. Lowell-Streeter, how many customers does Montana Dakota have located within that 2-mile radius that was shown on exhibit number 1?
There are 29 customers within the 2-mile radius.
And how many of those are within a 1-mile radius?
28 of the 29 are in the 1-mile radius.
And looking at exhibit number 2, does that exhibit demonstrate where are three-phase and which are two-phase and single-phase lines on here?
It does somewhat. Some of the stuff is cut off, but the three-phase comes from the substation south to that last corner at the bottom of that exhibit, and then runs easterly a short distance.
And is it runs easterly there? Is that the location from which you would extend service to serve the Menard site?
That's correct.
I want you to turn now to exhibit number 3. Can you tell us what's shown on what's been marked as exhibit number 3?
This is kind of a high-level view showing the changes and additions needed to serve the Menard site.
To a Montana Dakota system.
That is correct.
And was this exhibit also prepared by you or under your direction?
It was.
We'd offer exhibit number 3.
Mr. Olson?
No objection.
Mr. Norrell?
No objection.
Okay. MDU exhibit 3 is admitted.
Thank you, Your Honor. Using exhibit number 3, Mr. Lowell-Streeter, would you explain how Montana Dakota would propose or what it would need to do to extend service to the Menard site?
It's shown as Part C, kind of on the bottom there, and it would be an underground extension from our existing three-phase overhead line to the Menard site.
So where those two arrows kind of come together along that horizontal red line there right below the word McKenzie, that was the area that was shown on exhibit number 2 where our existing three-phase line ends, is that correct?
Correct.
And then you would continue on to extend that three-phase line to the east?
That is correct.
And what would be that distance approximately?
Approximately 1,800 feet.
And then would it also be necessary that facilities be constructed within the Menards location?
Yes.
And are those shown on exhibit MDU 3?
They are. They're shown as the red line within the blue square.
And what type of electric facilities would need to be constructed there?
It would be a three-phase underground line and three-phase pad mount transformers to serve the Menards' various buildings.
Did you determine the cost to extend service to the Menard site as well as the cost of the needed facilities within the Menard site?
Yes.
And who prepared those cost estimates?
Our senior engineer, Mr. Paul.
And he'll be testifying as to those costs later?
That's correct.
In addition to the extension of these new facilities, will MDU be required to make changes or upgrades to its existing service to serve the Menards site?
We will.
And why is that?
We need to make upgrades to our substation and three-phase line into the town of McKinsey.
And why do you need to make upgrades to the substation?
Existing transformers are not adequate to serve the additional load at the Menards location.
So what will be required to upgrade that substation?
We will need to replace the existing transformers with a three-phase substation transformer. We will need to add voltage regulators, reclosure, and associated wiring and switches.
And where will this equipment come from?
It'll come from our spares. We have a spare stock on hand, and that's where this equipment will come from.
Why do you have a spare stock on hand?
As we change, for example, if a substation has equipment in it and the load is increased and we buy bigger equipment for that substation, the equipment that's in service is taken out of service and put into spare stock to be used somewhere else.
And the transformer that you would propose to use to replace the existing transformer at the McKinsey substation, do you know where that transformer will come from?
It will be coming from the town of Napoleon.
And why are you replacing the transformer at Napoleon?
The loading at Napoleon has increased, so the existing transformer is no longer adequate.
And will the use of that existing transformer that's now at Napoleon be adequate to serve the load at McKinsey, including the new Menards site?
It will.
Can you explain, will there be additional capacity available too?
Yes, there will be additional capacity for future growth.
What will be the size of this transformer that you're proposing to use?
It'll be at 2,500 kVA.
And then, in addition to the substation upgrades, you mentioned that you'll have to upgrade your three-phase system in the city of McKinsey. Can you explain why that's necessary?
The existing three-phase line is electrically configured as a delta line, and that is not adequate to provide service to a large three-phase industrial customer, so it'll have to be changed to a Y-configured three-phase line.
And when you say Y-configured, that's spelled W-Y-E? Is that correct? Can you explain for the commission the difference between a delta and a three-phase and a Y three-phase system?
A delta and Y are they're electrically connected different, and typically the delta systems were used for serving single-phase and small three-phase load, whereas the Y system has the addition of a system neutral and has the ability to serve at a higher voltage and greater power needs.
Was the delta system at McKinsey, was it adequate to serve the needs of the McKinsey town site up to now?
It was and is.
And so why would it not be sufficient to serve the Menards site?
Because the additional three-phase load that is there, it will not be able to handle the power requirements to serve that additional load.
So what's required from an equipment standpoint to convert from a delta three-phase to a Y three-phase?
We will need to add a system neutral, which is another conductor running that length of the three-phase line. And when we replace the transformers at the substation, it's just a matter of electrically connecting them different.
So you'll run another neutral wire, if you will, from the substation along your existing three-phase path through the city of McKinsey?
That is correct.
And did you also have Mr. Paul calculate the cost of both the upgrade to the substation and the conversion of the delta to the Y system?
I did.
And he'll testify to that?
That is correct.
In addition to being able to provide service to the Menards site, are there additional system benefits from converting from a delta to a Y three-phase system?
It'll give us, MDU, the ability to add future load that may come into the area.
Would the conversion from a delta to a three-phase Y system be necessary regardless of the Menards addition?
Possibly. Historically, McKinsey hasn't seen a lot of load growth, but if that would change significantly, depending on the type of load and size, it may be required.
What's the length of MDU's existing three-phase line that will need to be upgraded as part of this conversion?
Approximately 6,900 feet.
So the total distance, 6,900 did you say?
Correct.
And you said the distance of the extension was how long?
1,800.
So the total distance then from the substation to the Menard site of this radial line running from the substation will be approximately how long?
8,700 feet.
And what's the relevance of the distance between a substation and the load to be served from a substation on a radial line?
Exposure to potential outages and also potential voltage drop depending on load served.
Can you explain, first of all, the potential exposure to outages?
The longer distance of a line, the more exposure there is to effects of weather, vehicle collisions, dig-ins, that type of thing.
And what about the potential voltage drop that you mentioned? Well, how is that affected by the distance?
The longer the line, the greater the resistance, and then that correlates to a voltage drop at the end of the line.
You also mentioned that outages can occur on, you know, depending upon on these lines. Does Montana Dakota have a history of its outage history? Does Montana Dakota have records of its outage history for the McKinsey line?
We do.
Showing you what's been marked as exhibit number 9, can you identify that, please? Oh, it's well, not on. It's not
okay,
on.
That's
the, we used all the PowerPoints up. We're done with those. We can give Darrell his clicker back.
Exhibit 9 is just a small spreadsheet showing the outages to the town of McKinsey since the year 2000.
And then behind the front sheet, what are those?
Those are the details of the specific recorded outages.
And are these these are taken from Montana Dakota's records?
That is correct.
And this was prepared by you or under your direction?
That is correct.
We'd offer MDU exhibit number 9.
No objection. Mr. Norrell?
No objection.
MDU Exhibit 9 is admitted.
Can you explain, Mr. Lowstreeter, what's showing on Exhibit number 9?
Again, the front page is just the number of outages. So in the year 2000, there was one. In 2002, there were two. In 2008, there was one. And one in 2011.
So these are all the outages along the McKinsey line from the year 2000 to current. Is that correct?
That's correct.
For a total of 5 outages?
That's correct.
On the right-hand column, there's notes there that reference Ryberg Farm. What does that mean?
Ryberg Farm was that line that ran south and west out of McKinsey, and there is a farmer on the end. His name is Mr. Ryberg, and so it's in our notes, it's the Ryberg Farm.
So what does that mean when it's shown there as the Ryberg Farm?
It means that this outage affected only that single-phase line that ran south and west.
So of the 5 outages, how many actually affected the town of McKinsey?
Actually, only one affected the town of McKinsey.
So that in the 13-plus years, the last 13-plus years, there's only been one outage on that particular line? Is that
That's correct.
Taken from this? In extending service to the Menard site, will it be necessary to cross any existing supply lines in Capital Electric?
It will.
Can you describe the type and location of the Capital Electric line?
It is a single-phase line right at the Menard site.
I want to show you what's been marked as MDU Exhibit 4. Can you identify that?
Yes.
And what is shown on MDU Exhibit 4?
The red line is that approximately 1,800-foot extension that we discussed earlier, and the yellow line is just showing a segment of the single-phase, Capital Electric single-phase line in that area that we would be crossing.
Was MDU Exhibit 4 prepared by you or under your direction?
Yes, it was.
We'd offer MDU Exhibit 4.
Mr. Olson?
No objection.
Mr. Norrell?
No objection.
MDU Exhibit 4 is admitted.
With the Capital Electric line that's shown on exhibit number 4, could that be used to serve the Menard site?
No.
Why is that?
The Capital Electric line is a single-phase line, and the Menard site will require three-phase service.
So would MDU's extension to serve the McKinsey site duplicate the Capital Electric line?
No.
How would MDU propose to cross the Capital Electric line?
As indicated, it would be an underground circuit, so we would be crossing underneath the single-phase line under the ground.
And would the MDU's line interfere in any manner with the operation of the Capital Electric line that would be crossed?
No.
I have no further questions of Mr. Lowestreeter.
Okay. Mr. Olson?
Mr. Lowestreeter, can you go back to number 1, please? MDU, exhibit number 1. If you look in the, I'll try to speak in one. If you look at the black box that is depicting, I guess it's depicted as being McKinsey limits. The east half of that box appears to have streets and lots. Have those streets been developed?
No, they have not.
Okay. Can you go to slide number 2? So this is showing the, if in relation to your exhibit number 1, this is depicting the approximately the west half of that black box. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. And you have 1 meter, that green dot in the bottom right-hand corner, that is east of Avenue B. That is your only meter that is east of that avenue. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay. And then can you please go to the next exhibit? So there it has on the right half, it has Herald Street, it has McKenzie Street, and it also has Avenue B that is right underneath the K and McKenzie. That whole area on this map appears to depict maybe cities or streets or future development or things like that, when actually the city cuts off at about the K and McKenzie. Is that correct?
That is correct. The existing is on the west half of that.
Do you know when the city was platted?
I do not.
Okay. But you haven't seen any requests for extensions east of Avenue B recently?
None that I'm aware of.
Okay. Can you have you been out at site and are able to testify as to the surroundings around the city?
Yes.
Okay. So east of Avenue B, can you describe what is in here? It's green, a green box that you have hashed around it. East of Avenue B, what would we be looking at if we were standing out there looking east of Avenue B?
It would be just open country, basically.
Is it currently being farmed?
I'm not sure.
Okay. If we look at your exhibit number 4, that gives us an aerial satellite view, and that appears to be an accurate representation of what's east of Avenue B. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And it appears to be open country or agricultural?
That's correct.
Okay. So in looking at this map, we shouldn't take from this map that you're serving that whole green box and that you have services up to the corner of where the Menard site is located. Is that correct?
Right. Our existing service was the one on that previous exhibit that showed the area that had service.
So you're right now, would you say that it's part C and it shows approximately 1,800 feet? Would that be a correct approximation of how far your current services are from the corner of the Menard site?
Yes.
Okay. If you just did that 1,800-foot extension, if I understood your testimony, you're not going to be speaking to the costs of these various upgrades?
That's correct.
Going to be someone else? Okay. If you just did that portion of the extension, would you be able to serve the Menard load?
As far as adding new facilities, yes.
Just part C, which is the extension of that 1,800 feet. If you just did that, would that be enough to serve the load?
Not without the upgrades we discussed.
Okay. So that's just one piece of the puzzle.
That's correct.
Okay. And so then you're going to have to upgrade the substation. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. And that's depicted there in this picture by the blue square at the on the top portion of the map?
That's correct.
Okay. And then this conversion that you talked about from delta to Y, that is going to affect from that blue box down to where part C has started to be depicted. Is that correct?
That's correct.
If you just did, I'll just refer to it as part, right? I'll refer to part A as a substation upgrade, which is depicted there. And B is the other conversion of that three-phase line that you discussed, and C is the extension of the entirely new area. If you just did B and C, which would upgrade the line and extend service, would you be able to serve the load?
No.
All three of them are necessary for you to serve this load. Is that correct?
That's correct.
So all three of those are required for the extension to the service, to the site, is that correct, to serve the load?
To serve the load, that is correct.
Were you involved in the application for permanent authority that was filed with the Public Service Commission?
To serve the Menard site?
Yeah.
Yes.
Was that prepared at your direction?
It was prepared by input from myself and our regulatory affairs department.
Before this was done, did MDU look into what was required to serve the Menard site?
I believe so.
So did you or at your direction have engineers look at what was needed for these three puzzles to be put together to serve the Menard site?
I believe, I'm not exactly sure of the timing on either one, but application, I believe, would have included that information.
Okay. All three of those pieces are important for the Public Service Commission to know about. Is that correct?
Objection calls for opinion speculation.
Okay. That's fine.
Sustained.
I'm going to approach witness.
Yes, you may.
I just handed you what's been marked Exhibit H, and this is the application that MDU filed with the Public Service Commission. If you look at paragraph 5, this is depicting or describing what needs to be done to serve this site, and it's directing that word picture to the picture in Exhibit A, which is showing what needs to be done. If you review that, and you can take your time looking at it, it's talking about an extension of 2,700 feet.
Excuse me, Council, did you mean paragraph 4?
Sorry, paragraph 4. Okay. Paragraph 4, excuse me. That's describing an extension of approximately 2,700 feet. Is that accurate?
Yes.
Do you see anything in this application that speaks to the substation upgrade or the conversion from delta to Y from the substation to the city?
I don't believe so.
So then this application wouldn't depict what's needed to serve the Menards site. Is that accurate from what you already said?
Objection. The application doesn't say all the upgrades will be necessary. It talks about the extension of the system that will be necessary to reach the Menards site. That's a mischaracterization of the application.
Does the
You can go ahead and rephrase.
Okay. Does the application say anything about a substation upgrade?
No.
Does it speak of a conversion?
No, it does not.
For purposes of the record, I guess I'd like to introduce H into evidence, which has already been filed with the Public Service Commission, but for purposes of the hearing, I'll offer it into evidence.
Mr. Kuntz, do you have any objection to making the application an exhibit?
No, Your Honor.
Mr. Norrell?
No, Your Honor.
Okay. Capital Electric's Exhibit H is admitted.
This upgrade of the substation that is being proposed, will this upgrade make that substation automated?
What do you mean by automated?
To where you can do SCADA entry back from your headquarters in, I guess, is your headquarters in Bismarck?
Correct.
Would you be able to, would you get real-time data coming back to your headquarters about things at the substation?
No, that's not in the planned upgrades changes.
Okay.
But it can be added. We have it at other locations.
But in what you're proposing with the cost that will be testified later, that's not included?
That's correct.
If I heard you correctly, you stated that there's 8,700 feet from the substation to the Menards site. Is that what I heard?
Yep, approximately 8,700 feet.
And that whole 8,700 feet requires an upgrade or a complete extension?
That is correct.
Okay. You stated in your testimony that there hasn't been much growth in this area. Have you received any other applications for further service around this service area?
None that I'm aware of.
Do you know when the last time you put in a new meter was in the village of McKenzie?
I do not.
Okay. Do you know if McKenzie is a incorporated city?
I do not believe it is incorporated.
Will you be testifying as to rates or revenue, or is that going to be someone else?
That will be someone else.
Okay. I have nothing further for this witness.
Okay, Mr. Norrell.
Thank you, Your Honor. Just a question, a point of clarification. Exhibit 3 here shows the proposed extension from what's been marked as Avenue B to the proposed site. And on the application, which has been marked as Exhibit H that Mr. Olson just put forward, the map shows a proposed extension of 2,700 feet from what's been marked as Roosevelt Avenue to the proposed site. Could you describe that? That appears to be a discrepancy or just clarification there.
Yeah, the difference is when adding the system neutral will basically take that three-phase to where it is showing on the exhibit that is up there. When without that system neutral, basically the three-phase was at the corner, and so that was why the difference was there.
And then an Exhibit 9, the outages in McKenzie. The middle column is entitled report numbers. What does that mean? Is that the
Our internal number on the different reports that are included. If you look at it's the first one in my book, at least. Report ID is 157.
Yep, that's correct.
And that correlates to the 2011 outage.
Okay. On Exhibit 3, Part B, do you know what the line voltage would be on that? The red line, Part B.
Could you repeat that question?
Do you know what the voltage will be on that line?
On the...
The red line?
After the upgrades, it will be a 12470Y system.
What voltage will Menards take service at?
The transformers will be 7212470Y on the high side and low side, depending on their service requirements, would it be either 208 or 480.
Is the red line now at 12470?
No, it is not.
What is it currently?
The red line shown as Part B is a 2400 delta line.
At least the big ones.
And do you know which witness will be testifying as far as cost?
Our senior engineer, Mr. Paul.
And how about rates?
Ms. Aberle.
No further questions. Thank you.
Commissioner Fedorchak.
Thank you, Craig. As far as, were you involved in this discussion from the beginning with Menards, or at what point did you become involved in the discussion with Menards?
From a engineering part of it, I'm not positive, but I believe maybe our energy group, our marketing development group, had probably had a conversation with Menards previous to us being involved. But we were involved early on.
And they reached out to MDU seeking this service?
That is correct.
On the three-phase versus a single phase, so I want to make sure I'm understanding correctly. You have an existing three-phase line, but it's not adequate?
That's correct. For the large commercial load that Menards will have, the existing three-phase line is not adequate.
So do you have to replace it, or are you just adding to it? Is it the addition of the neutral line?
With the addition of the neutral and the reconnecting the configuration at the substation, it will change electrically how it's connected, and then it will be adequate. No larger conductors are required.
And is that a less costly or a less extensive change than what would be required by Cap Electric to convert from a single phase to a three phase?
I can't speak to their costs. I'm not sure what their costs are.
Well, you guys what I'm trying to get at is you guys testified and showed that the line that they have is not adequate to serve this load, but it doesn't sound like your line is adequate either. You have to make these upgrades.
We have to make the upgrades to our line.
So I'm trying to understand how a three-phase line that has to be upgraded is better than a single-phase line that has to be upgraded?
I'm not sure that one is better than the other. They both single-phase service cannot serve Menards, nor can our Delta three-phase line serve Menards. They both, ours and Cap Electric's facilities would need upgrades to serve the Menard site.
Okay. I'm assuming later we'll get information from Capital Electric about all of your would have been, from my perspective, easier to have that ahead of time, because now I'm going to have questions for these guys again after we hear from you and could extend this hearing quite a long time. However, we'll proceed with what we have.
That's on Monday.
Okay, so let's see here. When you put the three-phase line in 1969, I'm seeing, or in the 60s, you said that it's the three-phase is mostly for industrial and commercial customers, and the single phase is for residential. And this is a residential area. Why did MDU install a three-phase back when you first made that investment?
Years ago, I would assume that the three-phase was installed because there were some three-phase customers, I believe, at the time. I think there was an elevator there at one time and some other facilities that required three-phase service.
Okay. Do you have a service air agreement for McKinsey?
We do not.
So you just historically have served there, and so that's just does your service area move go out that far, extend that far? Is there a gap between Bismarck and then there's an area of Cap Electric, and then McKinsey is just sort of a little carve-out for MDU?
Well, after Bismarck, we served some load in the area of Monocan, and then also this transmission line that we talked about earlier runs all the way along Interstate, and we have load served off of that at Sterling and Driscoll, Steele, Dawson, Tappan. So we serve areas all the way along there.
Off of that transmission line?
Correct.
And those are agreements, or just you don't have to have an agreement with Cap Electric for that?
No, we do not.
Okay. It would be helpful if we could get added to the record a map of the service area agreement that you guys do have.
Commissioner, Ms. Aberle will be testifying on regarding our franchise and certificate to serve McKinsey.
Okay. And then will you also provide just a visual for me of the service area that you have with Cap Electric and MDU?
The only service area agreement that we have with Capital is just around the city of Bismarck.
Okay, so it just cuts off on the edge of Bismarck, and then everything outside
I think it basically covers the city of Bismarck and the annexed areas, and then it's got some kind of potential growth areas that are, you know, envisioned in terms of who would serve after that, but it only goes out probably to maybe the extraterritorial zoning. Typically, they don't go beyond that.
So how far from McKinsey would that be? Because McKinsey's only 4 miles. Is it 10?
Yeah.
Oh.
At least
I see.
10 or 14, probably.
Okay. All right. Never mind then. Let's see here. Are you aware if when you make an application such as was provided in Exhibit H and already filed with the PSC, are you required to outline all the costs and all of the upgrades needed to serve a customer in the application to us?
I believe that we had showed just the extension only.
Okay. If somebody can answer that question later, or even our staff, that would be helpful to know as well. Let's see. When you make these additional upgrades to the system, including the substation, who's going to pay for all of that? Is that charged to the customer, as in Menards, or will you be charging some of those upgrades to the substation to MDU customers as a whole?
I believe Ms. Aberle will be able to answer those better than I can.
Okay. Okay, and then I have some similar questions about distances. In the application that you filed, you referenced 2,700 feet Can you explain on the maps where that number came from, the 2,700, what that refers to, an extension? I know you went through this already, but I didn't follow it, so I'll have to ask again.
The 2,700 feet is approximately from that corner where we were running north and south and then turning east. And
So it includes 1,800 feet from Avenue B to, and then all the way west to the corner. That's that correct?
Yeah, that is correct.
That's 2,700 feet.
Yep.
Then I wrote down from your testimony 6,900 feet from the substation to the Menards facility. Was that just?
The total to the Menards site is approximately 8,700 feet.
8,700. Okay, I just wrote that down wrong. Okay. All right. And are you aware, Craig, why MDU prefers to have, why Menards prefers to have MDU serve their load?
I believe that Menards will probably be testifying
okay.
to that.
All right. I think those are all my questions for now. Thank you.
Commissioner Kolk?
Thank you, Your Honor, and thank you, Craig. My gut would be that you'd rather be anywhere else today than here. Out there working, right, doing your job. Got a lot going on.
Go build something.
Absolutely. No, I appreciate your work for MDU and the state of North Dakota for all those years. How far west does your region go you supervise?
On the west end, it goes approximately to the Glen Ullin area and south into New Leipzig and up into the Zap Golden Valley area.
So you're starting to get near northwest part of your area. You're starting to see a lot of growth out there, so you're getting to see directly a lot of the impacts of the oil stuff coming your way, too. I don't really think I have a lot of questions for you, Craig. I might just have to set the stage for maybe another witness. I wanted to kind of extend upon what Commissioner Fedorchak was talking about how we got to this point, to where when, and maybe you can just fill in, if someone comes to MDU and they want you to provide service, I'd just be curious of how that flows. So I don't know if that's for this witness or for Tammy, because, you know, that's a question I'll ask Mr. Kuntz, I guess.
Craig can answer to the extent he can, and I guess Tammy can fill in to the extent she can. Otherwise, we've got other people in the room that.
Because what I'm trying to get to is how far up the food chain does this go? We've got the head of MDU Resources here, and, I mean, you just look at this decision that MDU made to pursue the discussion with Menards. You're crossing across existing capital facilities. You know there's going to be a fight. I mean, that's the part. I'd just be curious, how far up did this decision, was this decision made to pursue this at MDU Resources or at MDU?
I'm not sure how to answer that one, how far the decision was made. I guess I can answer a little bit when a customer comes in and starts talking to us about possible service. We do, one of the things is if it's out of our franchise area, of course, we need the PCNN. And as Dan had mentioned earlier, a lot of these are cut and dried where we might be real close and be the obvious provider, or whatever REC we might be working with might be the obvious provider. And we've had several of these already this year where we filed a PCN and there was no protest from the REC just because it was obvious. So on these that are not quite so obvious, we go through the process and get to where we are at today, that someone has to make the decision.
I guess we'll just see where that discussion goes. And this is maybe just a bias maybe I bring to this, that, you know, if Mr. Ryberg, it's Ryberg Farm, right?
Correct.
If he wanted to put a three-phase grain dryer in, would we be in here today for this discussion?
We would have still had to, I don't believe so. I let Dan answer. We served that customer already, so I don't believe we would need a PCNN to.
I misunderstood that. I thought he was already served by Capital Electric.
No, he's served by MDU.
Okay, I misunderstood that question then. Okay, that's key. I guess, but that's the setup of what is that tipping point of what is worth all of this. So, Fair enough. I think the rest of my questions actually are all with the cost part of this, so thank you.
Welcome.
Commissioner Christman?
Was Dawson the last town going east that MDU serves, or on this line anyway?
Tappan? Correct.
So those the various towns between McKenzie and Tappan, do they have three-phase going into all of them?
They do.
And is it Delta or Y? Is that, am I saying that right?
Yeah, Delta or Y. I believe, can't say certainly, I believe Sterling and Monocan are Delta, and I believe the rest of the towns are Y systems.
Were those recent upgrades or long ago?
They've been for many years already.
Okay. On your Exhibit 4, the Capital Electric line would appear, I suppose, to end at that farm. But where is it starting from? It on this map, it just looks like it comes out of nowhere.
Yeah, we just on the map was just showing the crossing, but I believe their line runs south to the farm and south to a railroad signal, and then it also turns east at that road, and I'm not sure exactly where it goes after that.
Okay. And then on your Exhibit 1, I'm looking just south of, well, right by the intersection south of McKenzie by the railroad. Under the E of Northeast, it looks like there's a green spot that there's a service there. Is that a service?
Yes, it is.
Is that the Ryberg farm?
No, the Ryberg farm is not shown on any of these exhibits. It's outside the two-mile radius.
Okay. Well, is that a like a railroad crossing there, or is that a farm, or what's there?
I'm not sure if it's the railroad crossing or if there's some other customer there. I can't answer that.
So then that becomes a single-phase line, and it goes south a ways, and then it turns and starts going west, and there's another place that I assume is a farm. And then where does it go after it exits this map? Do you have a bunch of farm customers out there? Or?
No, I think the only, after what's showing on here for customers, the only other customer on that line would be the Ryberg farm, which is at the end of it, which is probably another half mile or so outside the two-mile radius.
And that's the end of that line?
That's correct.
What's the history on how did MDU end up out there?
I'm not sure. That predates me by quite a bit. Our original franchise was 1928, and I'm not sure. This line vintage is at least 60 or prior to that, so I'm not familiar with that early history.
Is there a name? The one that is on the map after the line has turned and started going west, is there a name associated with that that I could reference? Or is it just the little dot between the 1 and the 4?
I don't know who the customer is there.
Okay. And then lastly, but I can't remember what page this is on. Just give me a moment. What was the map that was asked about that showed kind of the east half of McKenzie and when we were talking about whether that's basically empty or...
MDU-4.
And there's another one.
Exhibit 3 is also shown in Exhibit 3 and also Exhibit 1.
Was there another overhead, though, besides 4?
No. Well, there's the only overhead is Exhibit 4, and then the one that was introduced by Mr. Olson, which was with the application, which is basically a duplicate of Exhibit 4. Those are the only aerial photographs that have been introduced.
Okay. H, is that what we called it?
Yes.
This is where I seen something that I wanted to ask about. When you look at that overhead map, I think you said there are no streets out there beyond where we can see houses and stuff, but there are kind of real light green intersecting lines. So what am I seeing there? Is that some type of something that the city has laid out, or I don't get what's blocked out there?
I believe that's platting. That's from our GIS information, and so that would show up from the information that our GIS departments received.
Okay. So the computers
put entities that for future expansion, or if there's existing platting that is out there.
So the computer's putting that on there. That's not really in the photo.
That's correct.
Okay. I have no other questions. Thank you.
Judge, I have a follow-up.
Oh, go ahead, Commissioner.
Since we're looking at that same map, if you were to say a customer wanted to build a house on the Avenue E or on the far west corner of the McKinsey, the community of McKinsey, or whatever has been established as the boundaries, it appears, would you be the service provider? Would MDU be the service provider?
Yes. Yes.
Without any question, that wouldn't have to be determined. So if you had a customer, you could have a customer right kitty corner from this Menards facility.
That's correct.
Okay. And you'd be required to provide them service, or you could provide them?
Commissioner, that would be part of our obligation to provide service.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Chrisman?
I do have one more. Has there been any discussion that you're aware of McKinsey annexing these two quarters or whatever it is that Menard, I assume, has bought into the community?
None that I'm aware of.
Okay.
Commissioner, just for clarification, I don't believe, as Mr. Lowstreeter testified, that McKinsey is actually incorporated, so I'm not sure that they could annex it.
It's unincorporated, okay. Yeah.
Yep. It's controlled by the township board.
Okay. Commissioner Kolk?
All right, I tried this again. I called something the Ryberg Farm, which was not the Ryberg Farm, so I probably confused myself. But the in Northwest 33, 139 North, 77 West, straight south of town, I'm looking at either your Exhibit 4. There's some structures right there. I called that the Ryberg Farm. What are those structures?
On which exhibit is that, Commissioner?
Exhibit 4, MDU 4. It's on there, as well as the one Commissioner Chrisman was just talking about. Right south of where you're showing the line that where your line crosses potentially under Capitol's line. What are those buildings right there?
You're talking in this area right here?
Absolutely, right.
That's a little house farm that is served by Capital Electric.
Okay, so that was my setup question that I misspoke on. Okay, so that farm is currently served by Capital Electric.
That is correct.
Absolutely no question about it. Their lines are there. They're paying the bills, right?
That's correct.
Now, if they want to put in a grain dryer, three-phase power, are you going to be in here asking to serve that farm?
I believe it would be the same as we talked about earlier about the Ryberg farm, that Capital Electric is already currently providing service to that customer. And
so why wouldn't Capital automatically get that? Because they're already serving much closer to the area than you guys are. Even though it is, I get the argument, but shoot, they're already right there.
Only with single-phase service, and this would be a new customer requesting service.
So you're hanging your hat on the fact that new service is different than existing service?
That's correct.
Because you both have to make upgrades, right?
That's correct.
So if this guy's son wanted to build a farm across, he wanted to put in this new area, and he asked for new service, then you would then try to get new service? You'd be making the same argument to go after a new farm, a new house in this area with a grain dryer over there?
Well, part of the process is the customer request.
Okay. Back to my startup question of who makes the decision. So, okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
I'm sorry for calling that the Ryberg Farm. That confused it the first time.
Mr. Kuntz?
Mr. Lowstreeter, there was a question about which towns are served Delta, which or why. Is that a conversion that Montana and Dakota makes? Is this particular load changes within a community?
That would be correct if one of those existing Delta towns saw some customer that would spring up and require that kind of service, we would have to make those changes.
So those are types of upgrades. For example, you talked about the increase in the transformer size at Napoleon. You've talked about changing from Delta to Y. Those are the sorts of upgrades that Montana Dakota has to make to its system on an ongoing basis. Is that correct?
That's correct.
If, for example, a convenience store were to locate in the city of McKinsey, would you need to make this same upgrade that you're talking about here to serve the Menard site?
We probably would. You know, any type of little bit larger three-phase load, and they'd want underground service, we would be required to make that change from Delta to Y.
And that would be part of your obligation to serve?
That's correct.
I have no other questions.
Mr. Olson, any follow-up?
Just to confirm that you don't see, you've testified that there's hardly been any growth in this unincorporated city. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Nothing further.
Mr. Norrell?
Nothing further, Your Honor.
Commissioner Fedorchak?
Well, I'll ask one more since you're the engineer. The fact that a convenience store might require a three-phase service changes my understanding of what three-phase service might be. So can you go through that again, please?
A Delta-configured three-phase, it doesn't use a system neutral, so the technology is a little different. Most pad mount transformers are served by a Y primary. So the Delta is kind of again, an older system. So if a customer wanted a three-phase pad mount transformer, or in this area in McKinsey where we talked about, it's platted but there's no growth. If someone wanted to come in and put in like a 20-home subdivision and wanted underground service, we would have to make that change from Delta to Y. Just because the equipment associated with underground does not work with a Delta system.
So it's the underground that's requires that conversion?
Part of it is the load also.
Okay. How big of a driver is the load, or what types of things does a customer that needs that kind of service, what are they doing that might convert them to that kind of a need?
Well, not so much of a conversion, but if a new customer came in and his load requirements were such that the Delta system was no longer adequate or able to serve it, then we'd have to make that upgrade.
So what's the load requirements, I guess, that drives that?
Again, if it was a service that required a pad mount transformer, we'd have to make those regardless of the load requirement. And then if it was not associated with underground, we'd have to look at our system. We would do a study and look at voltage drop and those types of things and see if the system was adequate. If not, we'd make those upgrades.
And a pad mount transformer is the underground.
That is correct.
And why do customers request underground? Is that just a safety issue, or what's the advantage of having it underground?
Part of it is the voltage requirement. A lot of new commercial buildings, say a convenience store, those types of things, they typically want 120, 208, or 277, 40-volt service on the secondary side. And overhead transformers are usually not used to supply that type of voltage.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Commissioner Kalk?
Your Honor.
Commissioner Chrisman? Okay. Mr. Kuntz, anything further?
Nothing further.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Lowstreet. You can step down. We've been going for a while. I think we're going to try to get through at least one more witness, so before we take a break, if that's
fine,
all right.
Your Honor, we'd call Ken Paul.
Mr. Paul, you heard the previous witness be advised of the penalty for perjury. Did you understand the penalty for perjury?
Could you repeat it, please?
Yes. The maximum penalty for perjury is a Class C felony, punishable by a maximum fine of $5,000, maximum of 5 years imprisonment or both, being advised of the penalty for perjury. Do you promise to tell the truth in this matter?
I do.
Okay, go ahead.
Could you please state your name and business address?
My name is Ken Paul. Paul is the last name. My business address is 909 Airport Road.
And whom are you employed by?
Montana Dakota Utilities Company.
What's your employment position?
I'm senior region electric system engineer.
And what are your responsibilities as a senior electrical engineer?
I design and distribution lines, distribution substations.
As part of that, do you prepare cost estimates for those designs?
Yes, I do.
And how long have you worked for MDU?
34 years.
Could you summarize for the commission your educational and employment background?
Yes. I was educated at North Dakota State University. I graduated from NDSU with a degree in electrical engineering in 1979, and after which I came to work for MDU immediately thereafter.
And you've held positions with MDU, is that correct?
That's correct.
And what positions have those been?
District engineer and then senior engineer, which is my current position. That was in 1986.
And are you familiar with MDU's application for a certificate of public convenience and necessity to serve the Menards site?
Yes, I am.
And did you prepare an estimate of the cost of extending electric service from MDU's existing three-phase system to the Menards site?
Yes, I did.
Showing you what's been marked as exhibit number 5, can you identify that exhibit?
Yes, I can. I also titled it Part C. If you look at the drawing behind you, you'll see that each of the costs are broken down. It's the exhibit that's right behind you, MDU 3,
right,
that's on the drawing there. But this particular estimate shows the cost to extend from the city of McKinsey out to the Menards industrial site.
And this was prepared by you?
Yes, that is correct.
We'd offer exhibit number 5.
Any objection, Mr. Olson?
None, Your Honor.
Mr. Norell?
No, Your Honor.
Okay. MDU exhibit 5 is admitted.
So what's the distance of the extension that you considered in preparing exhibit number 5?
It'd be that 1,800 feet.
So this takes it from the existing three-phase system out to the Menards site, is that correct?
It actually takes it from the end of the existing overhead line out to the Menards site.
And what's involved in that extension? Can you go through exhibit number 5 and just highlight, you know, what you've included there in terms of costs that will be incurred to make that extension?
Right. As far as part number 1, you see stores material. That's underground high-voltage cable, three-phase cable, 4-aught if you're interested in the size. Also includes miscellaneous materials, such as the materials needed to transition from overhead to underground.
And so what's the total cost, then? Is that showing on exhibit number 5 of just that extension piece?
Yes, the total cost is on the bottom of the sheet, and it's $32,619. It also includes labor costs and a cost to do trenching and boring out to the site.
And did you also prepare a cost estimate for the construction of the facilities within the Menards site to reach the various facilities there?
Yes, I did.
And showing you what's been marked as exhibit number 6, can you identify that exhibit, please?
Yes, it's also labeled as cost estimate part D. That's the facilities that we would need to install within the Menards site.
And those facilities would also be outlined on exhibit number 3 that's on the overhead?
That's correct, in the blue area.
And can you, and that was prepared by you or under your direction?
That was prepared by me.
We'd offer MDU Exhibit 6. Did I offer 5?
You did.
Okay. Offer 6.
Any objection?
No objections.
No objection.
Okay. MDU Exhibit 6 is admitted.
Mr. Paul, can you, again, summarize the elements that are shown in Exhibit 6 that comprise the various cost pieces?
Yes, it includes, again, stores material, which would be the underground high-voltage cable, and miscellaneous connectors that we need to terminate the cable in each of the transformers. And it also includes our line crew labor, and also our contract trenching charge, too.
And what was the total cost, then, of the new facilities within the Menards site?
And that would be $66,000 and change, shown on the bottom of the exhibit.
Now, whether or not these costs are incurred by Montana, Dakota, or the customer, does that depend on the type of service the customer eventually decides to take?
I'm sorry.
Whether Menards would incur these costs or Montana, Dakota, does that depend on the type of service that the customer...
Yes, it does. It does.
Can you explain that, please?
Yes, if they would take service at high voltage, we would not need to provide the materials in Part D. That would be called primary service.
And if Montana Dakota provides these facilities, then what's that service called?
That's called secondary service, and they would take those at a different rate.
That's a little higher rate than the primary
service. That is correct.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Lowstreeter testified that upgrades will be necessary to the McKenzie substation and the conversion of the McKenzie three-phase system from a delta system to a Y system. Did you determine what would be required to make those changes and prepare an estimate?
Yes, I did.
Showing you what's been marked as exhibit number 7, can you identify that exhibit, please?
Yes, I can. It's also titled Cost Estimate Part A.
And that's a two-page exhibit?
No, it's a single-page exhibit.
The second
page is to extend the neutral from the substation.
Okay. So the first page is the upgrade substation upgrades?
That's correct.
Second page is the conversion from the delta to the Y.
That is correct, with the addition of the neutral. Mm-hmm.
And you prepared this exhibit?
Yes, I did.
We'd offer exhibit MDU-7.
Any objection?
No, Your Honor.
No, Your Honor.
Okay. MDU exhibit 7 is admitted.
Looking at the first page of MDU exhibit number 7, Mr. Paul, can you describe what's shown there to make the substation upgrades at the McKenzie substation?
You know, the first part shows material that includes switches, bus work, and et cetera, in, as far as that's concerned. And then it also shows our labor costs for our line crew, number of man hours, and the cost per hour. And also shows some contract charges where we need to install some concrete equipment pads. Also shows some charges for some other contract work for cranes to lift the transformer in and out and deliver it to the site. And again, at the bottom it shows, under Section 4 under the construction, shows our costs to for our equipment, our line trucks and other vehicles needed to actually install.
So what's the total cost of the substation upgrades being proposed?
$61,451.
Now, I don't see a cost on here for the transformer. Is that correct?
That is correct.
And why is that?
The transformers and other items that we're using have been totally depreciated out. They're that old that they've been depreciated. So the cost of those to us is basically on the books is zero right now.
So this, and that would be the transformer that's currently at Napoleon. Is that correct?
That is correct.
So if you didn't use this transformer here, what would you do with it?
It would go into our spare stock.
And it would be used there for the next project that might come along.
Yes, that is correct.
Would you turn to the second page of Exhibit MDU-7 and tell us what's shown there?
Yes, that's also titled Part B. That is the cost for us to extend the neutral for the Y conversion of the line from the substation south to the end of the existing overhead line.
Go ahead.
It includes, in the material portion, is conductor poles, cross arms, insulators needed to convert the, we need to re-insulate the line. And then, of course, again, it shows labor costs. And then it also shows equipment costs.
And what was the total cost estimate to convert from a delta to a three-phase line?
$32,562 is the estimated cost.
And that's shown on the bottom of that second page?
That is correct.
Does Montana Dakota have voltage service standards for its electric system?
Yes, we do.
Can you describe what that standard is and explain what it means?
In our distribution standards, we need to supply at the point of where we interconnect with the customer. Our voltage needs to be on a steady state basis plus or minus 5% of nominal. So, for example, if a customer was requiring 120 volts, we need to maintain on a steady-state basis the voltage minus 5%, which would be 114 volts, to a high of 126 volts.
So that your voltage needs to stay between those ranges, is
that
correct?
That is correct.
And is that an industry standard as well?
Yes, it is. It's an ANSI standard.
And Montana Dakota maintains that?
Yes, we do.
What affects an electric provider's ability to meet that particular standard?
The length of line between the substation and the load, the amount of load, the resistance, the size of the conductor.
And why is the voltage service standard important to a customer?
So that their equipment operates properly. If the voltage gets outside those ranges, they have operational issues with their equipment.
What type of operational issues might that be?
Damage to equipment.
Have you investigated whether MDU will be able to meet this voltage service standard in providing service to the Menard site as proposed?
Yes, I have. I've performed a study.
I'm showing you what's been marked as MDU Exhibit Number 8. Can you identify that document?
Yes, I can. It's a computer simulation of what exists or what will exist after our changes have been made.
And that was prepared by you?
Yes, I prepared it.
We'd offer MDU Exhibit Number 8.
Any objection?
Objection.
No, Your Honor.
Okay, MDU Exhibit 8 is admitted.
Can you explain to the commission what's shown on MDU Exhibit Number 8?
What we're looking at here is a simulation of the substation after it's been rebuilt. And that, of course, you can see in the upper left-hand side, it says the McKinsey substation. And there's a box next to it. It's called the load flow box. With regulation installed in the substation, we regulate to approximately 123.6 volts. That's pointed out by the arrow where it says voltage at McKinsey substation. And then we show a vertical line and then a where it says town load. That's the existing load from the town of McKinsey. And then the line extending, it turns to a transitions to a dash line. That would be the new three-phase line extending out to the Menard site. And you can see the buildings that would be listed there on the Menard site, buildings 919, 914, and so on and so forth. The triangles next to each one of those are the loads on this. And the very end, at the very end of this, we have a load flow box. And what I'm trying to show here in this drawing is that for the loads with the Menard's load and the town load, that the voltage at the very end point on our primary side of the system would be 121.3 for a voltage drop of a little under 2%. So we'd be able to maintain our voltage very easily between the substation and keep our voltage within that ANSI or our distribution standards requirements of plus or minus 5%.
And what is meant by upstream system protection equipment, and how does that work, Mr. Paul?
Any distribution feeder needs to have some sort of protection, whether it be a fuse, a breaker, or as we call it, a recloser. A recloser is similar to a breaker in that it automatically recloses. Many of the faults that we experience on our distribution system are temporary in nature. As high as 60 to 70% of those are temporary in nature. And so we employ at the substations a recloser, and this recloser is designed to clear temporary faults. The type of reclosers that MDU utilizes are three-phase reclosers, meaning that if there is a fault on just one phase, it opens all three phases, not just one phase at a time.
So what's the effect of that? How does that appear at the customer end of a one-phase versus a three-phase recloser?
What the customer sees when there's a fault with a three-phase recloser is a total interruption service. And, of course, the purpose of the interruption in service is to clear the fault. Many of the faults on the system I mentioned are temporary in nature. We have windblown debris, we have wildlife, things striking the power line, such as that. So those are temporary in nature. They clear so we can actually open the circuit, clear the fault, wait a few seconds, 5, 10 seconds, whatever the recloser is set for, close back in and reestablish service. So we have a momentary interruption in service, but not a sustained interruption in service.
So basically the electric service goes dead under that three-phase type recloser, is that right?
That is correct, yes.
And how is that different from a single-phase recloser?
If single-phase reclosers are employed, only one phase of the three-phase system is opened if it's a single-phase fault. That has a negative impact on customer equipment. During that time, only one phase is open. The other two phases are left closed. Motors, induction motors, three-phase induction motors, such as what those are going to be used by Menards, it could possibly damage them.
That's and MDU employs the three-phase reclosers. Is that correct?
That is correct.
That's all the questions I have of Mr. Paul.
Okay. Mr. Olson?
You mentioned that this transformer was going to have no cost because it's been depreciated out. Is that correct?
That is correct, yes.
What is the age of that transformer that's going to be used?
1958 is the vintage of the transformer.
Okay. What's the expected life of this specific one moving forward?
I would anticipate we would see at least another 20 years of service life out of that transformer.
it's safe to say that a new transformer would have a longer life than a used, depreciated out one from the 1950s.
Oh, definitely, yes.
Mm-hmm. I just want to look at your costs really quickly on number 5. That's your extension. The 1,800-foot extension, is that correct?
That's correct, yes.
Okay. And that total cost is $32,619.
Correct? That's correct, yes.
Okay. And then to number 7. Page 1 is the upgrade to the substation, correct?
That is correct.
And that is with the 1950 transformer, so there's no cost associated with that transformer.
It's with a 1958 transformer,
okay.
Yes.
And so that total cost for that upgrade is $61,451. Is that correct?
That is correct.
And page 2 of Exhibit 7, this is basically the conversion that we've been talking about from Delta to Y with a couple other conversions of, I believe it's once it takes a right, it starts heading east, that this also includes the conversion of that 1,200 feet as well, correct?
That's correct, yes.
So that total upgrade that's required to serve the Menard site is $32,562.
That is correct.
Is there transformers in that cost estimate of $32,000?
No, there is not.
Where are they coming from, those ones?
Some are coming from spare stock. The existing transformers are 2,400-volt transformers. Those would be taken down and put into spare stock. We would need to install 7,200-volt primary voltage rating transformers. They would come out of our existing stock and installed. There's approximately a dozen transformers of various ages. Some are old. Some are only a couple years old at this time.
So we don't know the cost associated with that?
I have not prepared any estimate as far as the cost of those transformers.
So that would be, any cost of those transformers would be in addition to this $32,562?
That is correct, but some would be a kind-for-kind exchange because of the age of the transformers being so new.
But we're not sure right now.
I have never prepared a cost on that.
So if I add up those three costs that we just talked about, this does not include any of the site work. Does $126,632 sound accurate?
Yes, it does. Mm-hmm.
And all three of those upgrades are required to serve the Menard site?
That is correct.
And those do not include the transformers on that are going to be during the upgrade of the Delta to Y conversion?
The single-phase transformers in the town, it does not include those transformers.
Nothing further for this witness.
Mr. Norrell?
Thank you, Your Honor. Mr. Paul, on, I believe it would be Exhibit 7. There's been talk about the 1958 transformer that's going to be moving from Napoleon up here, and there's no cost associated with that, but what's the value of that transformer to MDU?
Obviously, it has value. Because it's been depreciated out. I believe back in 1958 when that transformer was purchased, it had a value at that time of approximately $34,000. I would have to defer that question to Mr. Lostrader. He has the exact numbers on those transformers' costs.
Present day value, do you know?
It would be zero. It's fully depreciated.
So would you give it away if I asked for it?
Absolutely not.
What about would you charge for that? If I knew you had an extra three-phase transformer?
I would not know how to price it at this time. I would have to refer to our substation manager to determine what that value would be. I'm sure it has some value, but I wouldn't know how to price it.
And then will Menards own the transformers on the site? Would that be Part D?
If they take service at secondary voltage, Montana, Dakota, you will own the transformers. If they take service at primary voltage, they would need to provide the transformers and the underground high voltage conductor on the site.
How do they determine, or when do they determine if they're what kind of service they're taking?
That would be between regulatory affairs and the Menards people. The cost estimates have been developed by, I believe, Tammy Aberly and our marketing staff to determine, to give those numbers to Menards so they can decide which way they would prefer to go.
And then if the if they took it at secondary service and MDU owned the transformers, the cost of that would be passed on to ratepayers, is that correct?
I believe so. Yeah.
Will there be any customer contribution to the construction?
I don't believe so. Tammy Aberly could also address that question.
No further questions at this time.
Commissioner Fedorchak?
Yes. Excuse me, Ken. Since we're on the subject of the service options, I need you to explain those again.
Sure. A customer has a choice to take service at either primary voltage or secondary voltage. In this particular case, secondary voltage would either be 120.208 or at 277.480. In that particular case, Montana Dakota would supply all of the transformers on the site, and we'd also supply the high voltage underground conductor.
Okay. In which scenario?
That's the secondary service scenario. There are two different rates established. There's tariffs established
okay.
for those.
So then they will tell me what they will own? Under
they would own everything from the transformers into the buildings. They would own the service lines from the transformers to the buildings. We would own the pad mount.
Everything on their site, they would own that?
No, they would own the wiring from these pad mount transformers, which would be positioned next to the buildings, and they would own the wiring from there into the building. It would be the low voltage secondary conductors they would own.
So you would pay for them? You would provide them and they would pay for them?
We would provide the transformers and the high voltage side. They provide the low voltage conductors.
Okay. And that's under the secondary service?
That's correct, yes.
And tell me about the primary service again, please.
The primary service is where Montana Dakotas would come to the site. We would install a primary metering cabinet, and at which that point Menards would then run their own high voltage underground cable to each of the buildings that are pointed out in that one exhibit, the five buildings. They would buy their own transformers and install them. So they would be responsible for the cost of purchasing the high voltage cable, the transformers, and the secondary conductor going into each building. And for doing so, they would receive a discount. I believe Tammy will address that.
And tell me, I know you just mentioned this to Ryan, but it's still not clear to me, so you'll have to go through it again. How the cost recovery affects your other MDU customers under both of those scenarios?
I'm an engineer. I don't go through that. Tammy will address that, yes. Mm-hmm.
And if the costs are higher than what's anticipated, what happens then?
If my estimates are too low, is that what you're saying?
Right.
Well, MDU would absorb those costs and they'd be passed on, I'm sure, to other customers through our rates, so... I'm fairly confident my estimates are quite accurate. So, I mean, I've been doing this for 34 years, so I have a pretty good feel for what needs to be done on the system.
All right, fair enough. So, do you believe the service that you're proposing here would be more reliable than what Capital Electric will provide?
I can't answer that. You'll have to ask the engineer. I feel our service will be reliable, will meet the service requirements that are spelled forth in our distribution standards and will meet ANSI standards. So I cannot speak for what Capital Electric service, the quality of service they will provide.
Well, since you've done this for 30-some years, what, and that's one of the requirements that we need to look at, how do we determine whose is more reliable? What are the gauges that we should be using to determine
Our company does produce reliability indices, and they are provided to the public service commissions, and I don't know if the Capital Electric is also required to provide those numbers. It's on a company-wide basis and also on a per-region basis. Those numbers are provided to the commission. I do not have those available. I'm sure we could get those numbers to you. There are numbers, they're called, maybe you've never heard them before, but SAIDI, K fee, you know, and their May fee, and those are some of the reliability indices that that we have to produce and provide to the commission.
Mm-hmm. And that would be historical, but in terms of just the construction of this, the engineering of it, are there key things? I mean, you've pointed out a couple times the distance is the distance from the substation as a piece of a factor that affects reliability.
Oh, definitely. The further from the substation the customer is, the more exposure the feeder has to lightning strikes, wind-blown debris, a car running into a pole, et cetera.
Are there other things besides distance then? Those are the kind of things I'm looking for from you.
Not that factors. I can think of. That affect reliability, distance? Mm-hmm. Well, obviously maintenance of a system would affect reliability. If the system isn't maintained and operated properly, reliability would suffer.
Are there any? Is there anything about the system upgrades that you've described that would interfere in any way with Capital Electric's ability to maintain their system? Any of the upgrades or changes you're making?
None that I can think of.
Okay. That's it for now. Thank you.
Commissioner Kalk?
Thank you, Your Honor. Thank you, Ken. I'm always good. We've got a good bison in the crowd. That's always good. But in full disclosure, I know Mr. Olson's a good UND grad, so we always like that. But it did refresh me as to why I'm a civil and environmental engineer, not an electrical engineer, because I talk to both you and Mr. Lee, and I get a headache. So, but I do appreciate the work that you do in the system, reliability and all that, because as we found out in other cases, reliability in North Dakota, I think, is becoming questionable with not enough transmission and generation and all those things. Are you the senior system engineer for the whole MDU grid?
No, just for the Dakota Heartland region.
And how far northwest does that extend to?
Northwest, we go to Golden Valley.
Okay, so kind of the same as your counterpart then. I just have just a couple quick
questions. Mr. Lostrader is my immediate supervisor.
Very well done. Okay. Tell me this. When you do your designs with a company coming into your area, what do you require from them to be able to provide for backup generation?
We don't provide backup generation. If a customer desires backup generation, they need to purchase it and install it on their own.
There's no requirement that you would, when you deal with companies of this size and nature, you don't make recommendation to them that, hey, listen, no matter how good our service is, it's going to be down at some point in time, so you should have backup generation.
We suggest it, but we don't require it, of course. I don't know if our marketing staff goes out and says, hey, please put in some backup generation, but at no point in time do we come out to the customer that I know of that, and we say, you better have backup generation. We try to keep our system as reliable as we possibly can and respond to outages in a timely fashion.
I think that's a discussion we all need to always have with whatever it's homeowners and businesses they come on, because the grids become so reliable that nobody has backup for anything and we lose power. You know, the ethanol plant was in here a while ago and they were all screaming because they had a little interruption in service, and it's a plant of that nature not having backup generation to me is foolish. And so it would be interesting. I might ask MDU that question just for curiosity. But you don't have that discussion at all with them?
I personally don't. I don't know if our marketing staff does.
Okay. And then I'm sure it's in here somewhere, but what's the load that's going to come out of this thing? How would I define it in megawatts?
This is 1.2 megawatts, the load on this new facility.
Okay. And we assume this plant will be here for, is there a minimum where you talk with them before they're guaranteeing you 10 years before you even do this work, or is that more of a Tammy question?
That's a Tammy question.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Thank you, sir.
Commissioner Christman?
Your Exhibit 6 numbers, is what's the right terminology to explain the option that Menards has there? Is it the difference between primary service and secondary service?
That is the correct terminology, yes. Taking service at primary voltage versus taking service at secondary voltage.
Okay, and
the tariffs do describe that.
And what kinds of customers, or where's the line on when you start to have options like that? I assume if someone just builds a house in Eastern McKenzie City there, where there's nothing, there would be no such option. But
no, it's our rate 30, and that's for large customers, and I believe there's a certain demand minimum. I don't remember what the demand – Tammy would probably remember what the demand minimum would be. I don't know, remember what that is. Yeah, I think it's 50 or 100 kW. So
it's in the
– It's larger customers. To give you an example, people that take primary service from Montana Dakota Utilities or Bismarck State College, the North Dakota State Penitentiary, Bobcat – those are some of the customers that take service from us at primary voltage. Large customers that have 1 to 2 or even higher megawatts, you know, 1,000 kW or higher of loads. They are very large customers.
Would are there any individual farm loads that, you know, like with pretty significant grain dryer capacity that would have that option, or don't those get that big?
I don't deal with any of that, but I've never dealt with any of that, so I don't know. I can't answer that question.
Okay. I have no other questions.
Mr. Kuntz?
Just one thing, Mr. Paul. There was a discussion about the cost of transformers at the customer's location if Montana Dakota were to provide secondary service. What would you estimate the cost of a transformer per each of these buildings to be?
The total cost, I have figured that, and it's a little over $38,000 for all 5 transformers. That's an installed cost on the site, would be $38,000.
That's all I have.
Okay. Mr. Olson, anything?
Is Tammy going to be talking about the rates, or are you going to be talking
about Tammy will be talking about the rates, yes.
If MDU was going to put a new transformer at the substation, what is a new transformer cost now?
I believe Mr. Lostrader has that information. Can he address that at this point, or
we would have to recall him back.
I'm going by memory. A new transformer, $115,000. So
nothing further.
Okay, Mr. Norell, anything else?
No, Your Honor. Thank you.
Okay, Commissioner Fedorchak, Commissioner Kalk, Commissioner Christman. Thank you, Mr. Paul. You can step down. Mr. Kuntz, I think we'll take about a 10-minute break before we call your next witness.
Thank you.